Jimmy, Jimmy Corain, Jimmy Corain's a nerd. Jimmy Corain's an improv nerd. Jimmy Corain's a nerd.
Oh, Jimmy.
Oh, Jimmy. Jimmy Corain, Jimmy Corain's a nerd. Jimmy Corain's an improv nerd. Jimmy Corain's a nerd.
Hey everybody, Jimmy Corain, and you're listening to another episode of Improv Nerd, sponsored by my award-winning improv classes here in Chicago, The Art of Slow Comedy. And I am really excited to announce in October, I will be offering two sections of my advanced ensemble. I limit this class to only 10 people, and we work on forms, and we put up a long-form performance. It's stage 773. So if you want to get the attention you deserve, and you want to become an even better improviser than you already are, check out my website for more information on the Art of Slow Comedy classes at jimmycorain.com. We're also brought to you by the Hotel Lincoln, the official hotel of Improv Nerd. So if you're ever in Chicago and you're looking for a cool boutique hotel that's close to everything, and it's not only pet friendly, it's improviser friendly as well. And that's, I'm sincere about that. Check out Hotel Lincoln. Oh my God, do we have a show for you today? This is the third episode of our series of four that we recorded down in Austin for the Out of Bounds Comedy Festival. And our guest today is Tom Booker. Now, Tom and I go back a long way, back into the early 90s. Or was it the... I believe it was the early 90s. I'm old, believe me, people. Where we started together at the Annoyance Theater. And since then, Tom has gone to New York, Los Angeles, and then to Austin, Texas, where he started the Institution Theater. This is just so much fun to reminisce about the old times. But also, Tom talks about fame. He, like me, we suffer from some of the same things. There's a lot of similarities. I think he name drops a little more than I do, but it's there. And he talks about leaving Los Angeles and how he wanted to be someone had given him the advice to be a big fish in a small pond. And that's how he ends up in Austin. He talked to us about why he didn't end up marrying Ricky Lake. We also talked to him about this stage in his life and how he wants to help people. You are going to love, love, love this episode. But before we get there, in the last couple episodes, I really haven't talked about myself and my wife, Lauren. And I just want to quickly check it with you guys and let you know that we are still trying to have a baby. And tomorrow is kind of a big day here in the Corain household because we are going to the fertility doctor. I am going to jizz in a cup, and that jizz will then be transported into a turkey baster, and then that turkey baster will be inserted into my wife, and hopefully that will be a recipe for a baby. So wish us luck, and I'm even scared to say wish us luck because there's a lot of pressure. I want this one to happen, and I'm also scared because this process, they say that, you could have twins. It increases the odds of having twins. And I'm like 50, and I don't know if I could handle twins. So I'm scared. So I just wanted to share that with you. You're going to love this interview. Here it is. It was so much fun to not only interview Tom, to give him shit, but also to improvise with him. You're going to love this, the Tom Booker interview.
Oh yeah, Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd. Oh yeah, Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd. Oh yeah, Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd. Oh yeah, Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd.
You weren't supposed to say that, big fish in a small pond.
Why wasn't I supposed to say that?
I don't know. It just sounds... I mean, people seem to think I'm arrogant and egotistical.
But here's the thing is, when you came here, you were arrogant and egotistical. So tell me about that.
Oh, yeah. When I came here, I was so scared and so nervous and just so insecure that I dropped celebrity names like giving out Halloween candy.
What names
like
did you drop?
Like to people at HEB.
What do you mean? What's
HEB? HEB is like Ralph's or...
A grocery store.
Yeah.
Okay. But I was with you yesterday.
The Jewel.
Okay, the Jewels, as we say in Chicago. But when I was with you yesterday, you kind of walk around like you're the mayor of Austin.
I'm the president of Austin.
The president
It's true, right?
But I am the president of Buzzfeed. There's something about you.
I own the website. Okay. I own the domain.
Do you
yes, really? Yes.
But there's something about you, and I can relate to this because I'm the same way, where you want to be noticed. Is that true?
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I don't know if it's noticed so much as loved, Jimmy Corain. I think, and it also it's been described as there's never a stranger. You've never met a stranger. You know, I'm the kind of guy that I want to know the waiter's name.
Why is that important to you?
I don't know. I think part of it was, I used to be a waiter and for a number of years. And also, I think now it's because I want to be hip and cool like the kid at Kirby Lane, you know? So I can like, yeah, I know the waiting game too.
Now, Amy.
I used to work at Spielberg's restaurant.
Right.
That comes out. I did work at.
Would that be considered?
I once waited on Spielberg, just saying.
What was that like?
I tell you, I worked at a restaurant called Dive. It was Steven Spielberg and Jeffrey Katzenberg. You remember Levy Restaurants?
Did you sure.
Remember Mrs. Levy's Deli?
Yeah. Levy's they were like a chain, not a chain, but they had certain restaurants in Chicago, and so they opened Dive.
Which was a submarine that served gourmet submarine sandwiches. That's gonna last until the government won't let you do it anymore, and. And once Steven Spielberg and Jeffrey Katzenberg came in to taste the specials, and the management chose my section, and they couldn't have been nicer, and I was so pissed.
What were you pissed about?
Well, I mean, like, afterwards they sought me out on the Bev station to say thank you for the service, and I was hoping they'd be jerks, because then I'd be better than they were. And they were so nice.
Was there a part of you, because I would be like, I hope that I get a part that they discover me.
No, not in that. That was in AA.
Okay.
In AA. In AA, there was a famous director that went to the same meetings that I did, and I was in AA plays, hoping that he would see me and cast me. And to God. And to stay sober. He never came to Damn Alkies, the AA version of Damn Yankees, or the Wizard of Odds.
All right, so let's get serious here,
okay.
Because yesterday you're crossing your feet.
I'm trying to.
Okay, great. And Amy, your beautiful wife, I love her. I met her mother and father. Are you
that's
guys
right,
here? Are they
Mr.
here?
And Mrs. Avery, we're married now. We're not married yet.
You're not?
No. We just have coats and sin.
Okay. Are you going to propose to her?
Not right now. Remember, okay. Do you remember when I proposed to Mary at I.O.?
Yes. I got so much judgment. Would you have done that today?
No.
Just so people know this.
Okay.
Tom, tell the story.
We're kind of jumping all over.
Who cares?
All right. Amy, are you here? I've been married twice before. Yeah.
Did you know that?
Not until now. I used to drink and do drugs, and I was looking for something just to tie my life down so that everything else could fall into place. So I decided to get married, and I proposed to her name was Mary, on stage New Year's Eve at Chow at the I.O. New Year's Eve show.
Which was a restaurant. Chow was a restaurant, but we performed upstairs, and probably it was a banquet hall at one time.
Yeah.
It was really not a great space. Real high ceilings and just a shitty stage.
And young people, don't propose in public. And the marriage lasted about 9 months.
But to me, that is Tom Booker that I knew. Tom Booker, who craved the attention.
Look at me.
Yes. Exactly. Mm-hmm. What has changed?
I think what has changed is I will include the rest of the world in my scenes.
Okay.
You know? Whereas before it was just like, don't you see how great I am? Don't you see? Yeah, I was a little nutty.
Now, Amy, I want to get back to your wife.
Okay.
Love her. Love your family. love the goats. Is there room to talk about Amy, or do you want to focus all on you?
Okay, because
we can do that.
Okay,
great. She said something that I thought was so profound. She said, "I and Amy, if I'm off on the paraphrase, we'll edit this out." But she said, I would really like you to not do your scripted, your bits, your stuff like that, and really surprise yourself. Is that what you said, basically, Amy?
Yeah.
Okay. Is there anything you need to add to that? Okay.
I'm not doing Goofy Guy now. Okay.
So that would be my wish right. for you in this.
All
you
right.
know, and it's very hard for me not to have an agenda. Uh-huh. So I'm going to just, you know, because I love in these things when people talk about pain, but I'm screwed up. So
okay.
because I think that I don't care who you are, and I know your career and stuff like that. We all have we all have setbacks, and it's
yes.
not easy to be, you know, you've. Certainly here in Austin and in Chicago and New York and LA, you've achieved a ton of success. So we're going to go through that. Is that
right.
hard for you to take in?
No.
Okay.
I'm good.
All right.
Yeah. You're going to propose to me?
All right.
I did it, didn't I? Sorry.
Yes.
Sorry.
Amy, if you see it coming, just call it out, please. How do you get involved in improv?
You mean in
Chicago?
In 1986?
Yeah. 1986.
I was the mascot at the University of Oklahoma.
Uh-huh.
And I liked people looking at me, and I had no idea what I was going to do. And I got paired up with a roommate from Chicago, and he told me he went to high school with a guy he referred to as Bill Murray's brother. And then you and I know it's Joel.
Joel Murray.
And he told me about this place called Second City, and I called him up. And I said, I want to take improv classes. And they said, do you have any improv experience? And I said, nope, but I was the mascot for the University of Oklahoma basketball team. And they...
Like that credit would transfer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I was in the NCAA finals. I was voted best dancer by CBS Sports.
Okay. The local affiliate or the actual...
The network.
Okay, great.
Best dancer.
Okay, I'm impressed. I'm impressed.
Okay.
Okay.
I have a spirit stick
okay,
for mascot
great.
Camp.
Okay, all right. Okay.
Okay, I know what
okay.
I'm doing.
Okay.
I was really mad when the Clemson Tiger got best mascot.
Okay.
So they told me about Players Workshop of Second City. And I flew in on a Tuesday... in August, and I started classes on Wednesday, and it was great because I instantly had like 12 best friends, and I loved Players Workshop at Second City.
Well, what was it about improv right then that we were like, oh, I love it?
I wanted to be on Saturday Night Live.
Okay.
That's why I chose Second City, and I love it because...
At that time,
because people were looking at me uh-huh. at that time. Yeah, I wasn't a giver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of the things that in one of the classes, once we did something where we did everybody on stage,
mm-hmm.
and apparently whenever I did a scene, I did this,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't know I was doing that, so I stopped doing that.
For the podcast, what was that?
Oh, I shook my head violently left and right.
Checking out if people are watching you.
No, it was more like a double take, really.
Okay.
I still do that, but it's mainly commercials.
All right, and then we meet at the Annoyance Theater.
Yes.
And tell us a little about the Annoyance Theater when we were there back in 1986.
Yeah, is that when it was 86? Yeah,
I think something like that.
It started, first it was at, I guess, Metroform is what they called it. It was
right.
above Cross Currents.
Right.
And it was a small theater, not very big, and Mick Napier started it, and he had it looked like a living room.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that? It looked like a living room. And there were little candy dishes with cigarettes in them. Mick was a heavy smoker, and you could smoke and drink in our theater.
Right.
And he had a no-smoking section, which were two chairs set on a radiator. And our shows, or at least when we did co-ed prison sluts, we started with Metroform did like a sketch show, and then we did they did Splatter Theater and Splatter Theater 2, and then when we did co-ed prison sluts. It was free to get in, you paid to get out, which meant that it was free, and then we passed the hat. And you remember Medusa's Around the Corner?
Yeah, Medusa's was...
A punk rock juice bar.
Yes.
So we're all... And so these kids would come, and they were underage kids, and they would come and they'd sit on the floor, because we had carpet down there, and they all had mohawks, and Mark Sutton called it the chicken coop section. Because when they would watch co-ed prison sluts, it looked like a bunch of chickens. Just watching the show.
And tell us the character you played in that show.
I played Dr. Carl Bello, the cross-dressing prison psychiatrist who sings a love song to a dog. It was cliche, but we made it work.
How do you?
I remember. And,
what were you going to say?
Co-ed prison sluts. And this is the way we kind of did our shows at the Annoyance. Co-ed prison sluts started because Mick Napier wanted to do a musical about women in prison, and he wanted a fully dressed circus clown to fight a drag queen. And then we developed it through improv, and Mick would kind of, we would play to our strengths. And I remember calling Mick, and I was still a young kid from Oklahoma, and I remember calling Mick and talking to him on the phone and saying, I think I'm going to have to be the drag queen. And I remember going to the thrift store on Halsted, right next to Steppenwolf, and eyeballing a bustier that looked like it fit me. And I remember walking by real quick, just sort of grabbing it so no one saw me. With the bustier.
But you, because I was also in the show and I played Hamster Man,
yeah.
And I hated doing that part because it was just, everybody else had great parts, but Hamster Man basically was just like, he was the guy who was forwarding, you know, like he would just give information to forward the story.
He had to fight the clown because they were enemies.
By then I was so bored. By the time the clown came, I was just like so bored of doing the show. It was not
Hamster
a great
Man
part.
Was loosely based on the Birdman of Alcatraz.
Yes.
But instead of...
But you loved playing Dr.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, talk about a guy who soaked in the stage time. So how do you go from a guy who was afraid of... the bustier in a thrift store next to Steppenwolf to, it sometimes you would be known for taking your clothes off.
I would get
off.
Naked a lot.
Yeah. What was that about
for you?
It
was a really easy way to get attention.
Okay.
And I don't know. And I remember when I first started doing Dr. Bell, I wouldn't take my pants off until I had the dress on.
Uh-huh.
And I would do this on stage. What would happen is I would hypnotize the prisoners, and while they're under, Amy's parents are here, I would hypnotize the prisoners, and while they were under hypnosis, I would take off my clothes and put on women's clothing, and then I would give them a post-hypnotic suggestion and tell them that when they came to, I wasn't wearing women's clothing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and there would be an orgasm or two in there as well. And I loved putting on the dress, especially when we were upstairs because it was so hot.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, when I remember coming out in the dress and there's this cool air and it just felt good. Am I right, ladies? Yeah. So how did I don't know. I think being a part of the Annoyance, and we were the Bad Boys of Chicago Improv. And we just kind of, or at least that's how I saw it, that we were pushing the envelope, and that's what we did.
Now, something here that I think is interesting, and mm-hmm. we don't have to talk about it if you don't want to, but there was a sense back then you were very ambitious, you wanted to be famous, mm-hmm. And that kind of went against the grain that was going on
yes.
in the theater.
Uh-huh.
How did you deal with that?
Because
you had a very upbeat personality, but we all knew that Tom Booker wants to be famous.
Right.
And you didn't make any bones about it either.
No, I guess.
Right.
How did I don't know. I mean, I just did it. I just wanted to work as an actor, and I did want to be famous, and I still do.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do too, Tom. Yeah.
It just isn't the end all. I know mm-hmm. I can be happy with just only a little bit of fame.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know that yet. I'm still trying to discover that.
I still think that there's still a chance for me to work in television, but I think rather than me trying to do it through an audition and in Los Angeles, if it happens, it's going to happen with these people.
Austin.
Us just, yeah, because, and that's, I mean that, guys. I mean that. And what's weird, this scene reminds me a lot of Chicago in the 80s because it's a lot of very talented people. We're getting very, very focused and figuring out what it is that we really love to do. And the great thing is there's no industry watching us. And so we get to try things and not worry about failure. And there is an audience here that would support it.
Okay, so let me play the devil's advocate.
Yes.
How do you keep people here if there's no industry, if there's no opportunities? People leave.
That is a problem that I think the very ambitious people leave quickly, which is just one of those things. But there's still a lot of talent here. And what we would do is just really play to our strengths. You know, rather than trying to be someone else, we would be ourselves and create things from that. And here, the great thing about not being in industry is you have a group of people here that do it because they love it. So if we put something together, having fun with ourselves, that's the reward. And if something else comes of it, great. And as long as we keep doing that way, it'll be fine. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think
I know it's a great... there is so much talent in this town. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You were really unhappy in L.A. the last couple of years,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
What was the unhappiness about before you came here to Austin?
A couple things. I was bitter. Mm-hmm. I was disappointed that things didn't work out the way I wanted.
In terms of the business or in terms of?
I went through a divorce.
Okay.
Really, it was not, there's no easy divorce. There really isn't. Mm-hmm. But this one was, I don't want to say too much because she's probably a fan of yours.
A lot of people are.
Yeah. And I'm sure she has her side of the story,
right?
But just not a podcast.
Right. Next month she'll be on.
Oh, good.
So say what you want.
No, we're friends now.
And you told me an interesting story about what were you doing, like a fish face?
I did. No, I did. Jessica, I was not doing a fish face. Stop it.
Okay, great. But you were telling me something. Was it Second City where you, or was it here when you first started talking about it? Oh no, was it Second City?
What?
You were going through the divorce and you got evaluation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, what? Yeah, I went through divorce and the divorce took a long time.
You're still in L.A. at this time.
Yeah, because I wanted to get divorced but still wanted her to not hate me.
Can I ask, what is it about you? Because I see it in you as in me too. What is it that you want to be liked by everybody?
I don't know.
Because I have that same thing.
Yeah.
And it drives me insane.
Yeah.
How do you think it's gotten in the way of your career?
I think that it's one of the ways it's gotten in the way of my career is I lose focus. You know, I'll agree to do too many things.
Because you don't want to piss people off?
Yeah, well, it's kind of a double-edged sword. I don't want to piss people off, but I also like being asked to do things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's pretty neat. That's a nice ego boost. Yeah.
Even at this age, it's nice to be asked to do things.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
So let's go back to L.A.
Okay,
the bitterness when you're teaching at Second City and you get an evaluation.
Yeah, I was really getting used to living in self-pity. And I would I would start off every class in Second City with this phrase, let me tell you what she did this week. That was my opener.
That is really creating a supporting, nurturing environment that improv really needs.
And then I once got a teacher evaluation that said, I didn't pay $350 to hear about his fucking divorce. Okay.
So
I got better, but...
Yeah.
Eventually.
But when you were in L.A.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, it's not like the last couple of years, but you had a really good streak, especially with commercials.
Uh-huh. I loved commercials.
I've got to tell you something, Tom.
Yeah.
I've been auditioning. I won't audition for commercials anymore because for 20 years, I never landed a national commercial. You had like 10 years of...
You know why?
Tell me. I would love to know.
You never took my workshop. It's a good workshop.
Okay.
Now, what? Tell you why. Why was I successful in commercials?
Yes.
I loved doing commercials. I loved it. And there were a lot of people that were looking at commercials as just like a way to pay the rent until they did the real work. To me, that was the real work. And the stuff, I was with a group of guys. I call our category the goofy guys. And the goofy guys never got the serious stuff. We weren't doing a lot of drug commercials. You know, we were doing this stuff where you show up and get to pretend to be a lobster. And that's great. You know, and also there are times, you know, you can't be upset. We're like, God, I wasn't the best lobster. You're like, okay. And you can leave it at the door. And I love the time frame of it takes a day.
But you tell me there was a time before you had this long run of commercials.
Yes.
Where you weren't
booking
anything.
Yeah.
And you were thinking about taking a workshop and you make a phone call.
Yeah.
And that changes everything.
Yeah. What happened was I was working for Steven Spielberg at his restaurant. And and I had been waiting tables.
Amy, was that a bit that you've heard before? Okay, great. I thought so. It smelled like it. I mean, it totally smelled. I know. Can we? Let's get back. We'll hold on to this story for just a second.
Sure.
But you have such a reputation down here of being a name drop.
Right.
Okay. What is that about?
Originally, it was about, like I said, I was so insecure and so scared that...
When you came here.
When I came here, that I thought that's how they'll like me. That's, I don't know, does any... Cody, do you remember when I called Eve Plum from the stage of Cold Town?
That almost sounds sad, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Look at her.
Yeah. Like, I called Jan Brady from...
Did she remember?
Yeah, she remembered.
Did you have a conversation? Was it
awkward?
Yeah,
she used to do a lot of theater go-go shows.
Okay.
Yeah, we just had dinner the other night.
You and Eve Plum?
Yeah.
Here in town?
No, it was in New York.
When you were now in New York?
We were in New York.
Okay, great.
Yeah. But what, Gary was there.
Gary Ruderman, our good friend. Yeah. But what names do you drop?
Oh. I do think that it would be easier to list the names I don't drop.
Okay, great.
That's true, right?
Okay.
I mean, everybody.
So let's go through a list here. Andy Richter?
Yes.
Okay, what do you say? Okay, Ricky Lake. Okay.
Oh, you want to hear that story?
Okay,
I can't say.
What's the Bob Odenkirk story?
I can't say.
What was it? Was it at the Annoyance?
No, what happened was, Bob should be proud. I was at the Hollywood Y. This is my Hollywood Y, and I'm brushing my teeth or shaving, and I look over, and there's a guy toweling off his head. And I literally thought, there's another guy whose dick is bigger than mine. And he pulls down the towel and is like, oh, hey, Bob. It's Bob Odenkirk. He's like, hey, Tom, you want to be in my movie? So that's how I got my small part and go, let's go to jail. By looking at Bob's penis. Who wants to take my workshop?
All right.
Before we begin, let me tell you what she did this week. What?
Ricky Lake. We heard Ricky Lake.
Ricky Lake.
Yeah.
Ricky. I met Ricky when we did, after Chicago, we were in a show called The Real Life Brady Bunch. Went to New York.
Was she heavy back then or skinny?
She just lost all the weight.
Okay.
I remember when she got a jacket. I think it was for Crybaby. She got, you know, like a cast jacket, and she was so happy because she was a medium. Mm-hmm. She was really just thrilled. And, and so we started, she did a guest spot on The Real Life Brady Bunch. And
which was the live stage show of The Brady Bunch, if people don't remember that.
And we started dating.
And then what happened in that relationship?
I went crazy, and she got a talk show.
Okay. But didn't you... They're laughing because there's a part of the story you're leaving out.
No, what happened was she went to New York and she wanted me to come to New York. And she wanted to get married, and I just got divorced and I wasn't really ready to get married. And this part I don't really share is I really thought that I was going to be famous, and I didn't want to be famous for being Mr. Lake.
Okay.
And she was wonderful. I mean, she's a great woman, and she treated me great. And she moved to New York, and I was, and you know who helped me? I'm going to drop a name.
Yeah.
Helped because I was upset. I just gotten sober, and I'm waiting tables at Steven Spielberg's restaurant, and she is becoming Ricky Lake, and I'm just crushed. Mm-hmm. And I missed my big chance. And I thought, who has gone through this? Who's ever been in this position before? And so I called Tom Arnold.
How did you know to call Tom Arnold?
I was at a party at Julia Sweeney's house, and it was when I was going out with Kathy Griffin, and
which you cheated on Ricky, didn't you?
Yes.
Okay, is that okay to bring
up? Well, apparently Ricky...
I mean, everybody knew this, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, apparently...
I feel fucking shame for revealing
apparently,
that.
Well, I guess it's in her book, and not okay. Names aren't mentioned, so okay. Maybe I'm wrong.
You probably were like, why didn't you mention my name? That's how I'd be. Why didn't you
know,
mention my name?
No, I feel okay, really okay, bad. Okay. It was when I was still drinking, and I thought that that's, you know, guys, men have sex. And now, you know, you get sober, like, no, men... have integrity and are true to their word, not, you know, sleeping with Kathy Griffin.
So you called Tom.
Okay. So on Julie Sweeney's patio was Tom Arnold, Chris Farley, who he helped get sober,
right.
and Roseanne, who was afraid of a cat. It was weird.
She was afraid of a cat?
There was a cat there, and she was
Right. Okay.
And I was 100 days sober because my friend John said, do you want some drinks? Do you have anything non-alcoholic? And Tom Arnold says, what's the matter, Tommy? You drunk? I said, I have 100 days sober today. And he gave me his card. He said, need anything? And so
what does Tom Arnold say to you when you talk?
We traded messages.
Okay.
He called back. He was in Iowa. And then during that time, he got caught having sex with his assistant. And so...
Not a good time.
Not a good time to talk to me. Yeah. And so... That's the last time I talked to Tom Arnold.
It's interesting when you talk about the Ricky Lake.
Yeah.
There's a real sadness that I see in your eyes. Is there some truth to that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I was just nuts.
Uh-huh.
You know, and like she was great. She
did you ever see her and say, "Hey, look, I'm sorry for what happened"? Or
I did. I think I made some sort of half-assed amends. So, but we chat every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was out here a few years ago, and we got together for lunch. And I once, when she got divorced, I went to a barbecue that she was at.
Mm-hmm.
And and then I took my friend Russell, and I was crazy.
Right.
And
when you say that, what was making you crazy? L.A. or?
I think I just sort
the
of
fame
did not
thing
see
like her. you're not getting what other people are getting. That's what made you crazy.
That, and I think in L.A. too, there's just a couple things that I've noticed. The first time I went back to L.A. after living in Austin, was I noticed that there's a sense of desperation that I didn't notice before,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I was living in it. You know, it's sort of like you ask a fish to describe the water and he says, "What's water?" You know? And so I noticed that. And then a year ago, June, I was in LA and I lived there for 15 years. And it was the first time, I noticed it was the first time I ever felt comfortable in LA because I was just there to be there. You know, I was just there to see friends, mm-hmm. not try and make it or get something that you have. And we were talking about Ricky. I just wanted to make it on my own, you know, and I wanted to stay in L.A. We just moved out of New York after the Brady Bunch, and L.A. had a little more elbow room, but really I thought that I didn't want to be Mr. Lake.
So let's go back to you wanted to take this workshop with the commercials.
Oh, okay.
Call this woman.
Yes, so I was at the restaurant. I said, I'm thinking about quitting because I'd gone 2 years.
With not getting anything.
Auditions, didn't get anything. And Deb Durr, not a name you'd know, but a fellow coworker. And gave me this number, a woman named Mariko. And I called her and we trade messages, left a message. And she called back and she said, "If this is the Tom Booker I'm thinking of, you don't need my workshop. Perhaps we can just talk." Turns out that I knew her because she runs a lot of auditions for Danny Goldman, who used to be in a lot of Disney films. And we talked on the phone, and she just asked a question. She said, "Are you doing what you think they want, or are you doing what you do?" And I said, "I'm doing what I think they want." She said, "Stop it. Do what you do." And then I started doing that, and I started booking the shit out of everything.
Okay, so you say that, but what does that really mean? For people that are listening to the podcast, okay. or you know, students in the audience, and improv students, what does that really mean, do what you do?
It means trust yourself, trust your instincts. They don't really know what they want. They have an idea, but they don't know what they want. And so there's no way for you to come up with that. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no way for you to figure that out. So just do what you do. Do what's fun for you, because that's how your intuition speaks to you. That's how your talent speaks to you. That's how you bring something to the table that no one else can bring. And then no one books everything. And an audition basically is a sales call. I always think about, and I'm just going to date me, Green Acres. Remember the TV show Green Acres?
Yeah, I don't know if they will because they're much younger than us, but Green Acres.
Green Acres, okay. Well, there was a character named Mr. Haney. And Mr. Haney had a horse-drawn cart?
Yeah.
And he would pull his horse. It had pots and pans.
And he was kind of a shikes. He was kind of slick.
Yeah, and he'd sell them their wares.
That's,
yeah. And when you go to an audition, you're like showing them your wares, and then you leave it at the door. You know, because there's so many factors, especially in commercials, so many factors as to why you might not get it that it'll drive you crazy. So and the one thing that you can work on as you... when you're an artist, is the only thing that you can do yourself is to continue to become the best artist that you can become. That's it.
And speaking of art, we're going to do some improv right now.
We are?
Yes.
I didn't, okay.
You didn't know that?
No, I didn't really.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Well, what if I suck?
With some... It'll be... Then when we come back and we talk about it, we'll have more to talk about.
Oh, good.
Are you afraid that you're going to suck, really?
Oh, yeah.
I am, too. I'm terrified.
Yeah.
I mean,
especially when you're a teacher.
Yes.
And you're like, yeah.
Like, I taught a workshop.
Get out of your head and into your heart, Booker.
Right.
What's that about?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I always get like, you weren't very slow. You know, or you say, you know, okay, great. Okay.
Way to deny that guy.
And it's double pressure because, like, I taught a three-hour workshop. So, I'm, you know, and everyone's after the workshop like, oh, you're great. This is amazing, all this. And you're just like, okay, why don't you come tonight at 8 and see Tom and I improvise to know that I'm full of shit.
All right,
you know?
Good.
Okay.
That'll be my job.
Okay, great. All right, so we're going to do about a 10-minute scene.
Just one scene? So
we're going to do one. Do you want to do multiple
scenes? I'm just asking. I want to make sure. No.
No, okay, great.
I want to do no scenes.
Are you serious?
No. Okay. I want to show. Look.
We can
is Lauren Michaels here? I want to be the oldest man to ever be on Saturday Night Live. I want to be the reason. I want them to
show
one of those chairs that goes up the stairs at 30 Rock just for me.
Had you heard that one,
no.
Amy? Is that totally new, that bit? Okay, great.
I have never.
I can smell
never said that. That is new. It might be similar, but it's new. I will talk about I want the chair at the hideout, because those stairs at the hideout, just like you step on each one, like, hey, you're old. Oh, and you're fat too. And
well, you know what's really scary at the hideout? I want to, because it makes me sound like I'm
the hideout's a wonderful theater.
It's a great theater. Yeah. So before this, we did a show with Paul Britton, which was great. And so there, Dave Buckman is like, okay, we're gonna go. So we're upstairs in the dressing room. We're gonna take you to the stage. And I'm like, okay, great. So they take you upstairs, right outside a door, and it's a fucking catwalk. Yeah. It's like you could fall and kill yourself, right? So I'm like, Jesus Christ, 50 years old. I'm trying to impress Paul Britton. I'm trying to, whatever. Like, then we get down there, and there's a fire door, a metal door. The door's locked, you know?
Welcome to Austin, Jimmy.
It's great.
Yes.
Okay, we're going to improvise.
Are we going to sit? Are we going to
No,
up?
We're getting up.
Okay.
Everybody asked that. What is it about?
Well, I mean, it seems like you have to record.
No, we're just going to pull the cue back with the microphones, great. And we'll do it in front of it.
All right.
Everybody is like,
why are you irritated with me?
I don't know, because I did an improv nerd.
So you
with
are
Horatio.
Irritated with me.
I am. Not at you. I did an improv nerd with Horatio Sands, and we were at Columbia College in Chicago, my alma mater.
Hold on. I know Horatio Sands.
Right. And we're in these big, comfortable chairs, and I'm like, okay, we're going to improvise. And Horatio's like, okay, great. And he just sat in the chair. And I'm like, okay. And I got up out of the chair, and it's like, no, we're just going to sit in the chair. You know, it's like, okay. You know, so I'm like, we could do a little more. We could stand up, you know.
I don't know. I don't know if we can.
I know it's late for us. It's 8:41 here, Central Standard Time, and we go to bed about 9:30.
Yes.
So, okay. So
you say that like we sleep together. That's a soft job.
Amy, is that new? Is that a new one? That seemed, it's new. Great.
Are you ready?
Yes, we're ready. I'm totally stalling here. Okay, so we need a suggestion. Piano? So you have bathroom, piano, A1 steak.
I don't care.
Okay, when you hear that, when you say I don't care, what's going on? In terms of your process.
In terms of my process,
do you have something already in mind?
No.
Okay.
No, mine's like, whatever you want to do, I don't care. I'll be there.
Okay. So you heard the suggestion.
And what is bathroom, piano, A1 steak?
Yeah.
All right.
Does any of that mean anything to you?
Yes, I use the bathroom, I can play the piano, and I like steak.
Okay, so how do you then turn that into anything in terms of scenically?
Okay. What kind of rings with me right now is I would love to start a scene that's where I say, I like steak.
Okay, great. Great.
That's what I want.
Great. Okay, Leonard, you'll be fed at 5:30.
Okay, Jerome.
Leonard, I made steak.
All right.
You either eat it, or you're not eating anything tonight.
I'll eat the steak.
Eat the steak.
You're standing between me and a piece of steak.
Fine. Your sister called. Your sister called. She's going to come over later.
Oh, I don't want her to come over.
She said your mom's not doing well.
My mom is 98. Do you know anyone that's 98 that's doing well? Do you? Do you?
I'm thinking.
You know what people at 98 wish? That they died at 97. I like it rare.
I'm going to tell you something. Ever since you had the glaucoma surgery, you have become a bigger crab.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. I'll reheat it.
You can reheat it to rare. Oh, I didn't know Jerome had a magical microwave.
There you go. I don't get you. I don't get you.
What do you go get?
We're living in this senior center.
Yeah.
And you never want to go out.
Oh, why? I was out. I've been out. That's why I came in. Out is tiring. Out is not worth it. It's not worth a trip out. Out is unpredictable. This is predictable. Except for this. This is not predictable.
Well, you know what?
What?
I want to go out.
Oh.
I want to go out. Okay. I want to mingle with all the other people that all are right. here.
There's your door.
But you know what? I'm worried if I leave you here. Are you choking? Oh, you're choking. Oh, my God.
Oh, okay.
Why don't you...
What do you mean I don't learn
you
anything?
You don't learn anything. You just choked on a piece of meat and you 2 seconds later you put another piece in. You know what I think? I think you want to die.
Oh.
You want to die.
Oh.
I saw that noose in the shower this morning.
Oh.
I didn't want to say anything.
Ooh, look, Chris can figure it out. The old man wants to die.
Oh, don't you change the subject. What? You've got a death wish.
Oh, God, yes. I do. I have a death.
You want me to kill you?
Yes.
You want me to kill you?
Yes. But wait.
You are out of your mind.
I am. But I want to die. I can't go on like this. And in order to help you do it, I'm leaving all my stuff to you. There's $627,000.
This is really tough.
I hate you. Come on. Come on, Jerome. Come on. Wait. Could be my last meal.
You are making this really difficult on me. You're making this really hard.
Come on. Do it. Do it. They're not going to do anything to you. Shoot me with that knife.
Motherfucker! You! Oh, I can't stand you! Oh! Oh!
Oh, what an idiot! What an idiot! You should see, look, you would have. I need to. Okay.
Oh! Oh! That was my good arm.
You don't have a good arm. It's all in your head. How could you do that to me? We're brothers, for God's sakes. I should choke you. I should choke you. Right now, I should choke you.
Oh, Jerome, I ain't taking it so hard. It was just fucking
you almost had me kill you.
It was funny.
Was it?
Yeah.
What, did you really scare me? Oh, you really scared me.
Yeah.
Remember that time you almost tried? Dad did the same thing to you. Remember that?
I remember.
Remember that? It was your fifth. It was you were in fifth grade and you came home. You won that trophy for bowling.
I like it rare.
You don't want to go back to the past, do you? You just blank it out.
I don't want to talk about Dad. I don't want to talk about Dad at all.
Sorry I brought it up. You should have forgiven him.
He's a fucker.
He was a drunk.
Oh, so a drunk's not responsible for his actions?
He died sober.
9 months sober. After 87 years, drunk as a sailor. That's nothing.
He loved you. He loved both of us. He was doing the best he could. I love that man. You should have shown more respect for him. You never even went to the funeral.
He wouldn't come to mine. His just happened to be first. I like steak.
I miss him. You remind me of him a lot of the times.
Okay.
Your temper, your little shenanigans, always wanting attention. You did that for attention. You did that when we were kids. Always on the stage. You could have been something.
Oh.
You were good.
I wasn't good enough. I was not good enough.
You were your worst critic.
Oh. I tried. I fucking tried. They didn't want me. They didn't want me for what I
Bullshit.
Did.
Bullshit. 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 You quit on yourself. You did. I should let you die.
Go ahead. I got $627,000.
Bullshit, that's a lie, that's a lie! Yay!
Yeah.
That was fun.
I liked it. I don't know.
I love the ending for some reason. I'm just such a sad guy, and I felt very connected towards the end.
Well, one of the things, too, is I mean, I didn't plan on being stabbed or what,
right.
But I know that you taught going to the dark side today,
right?
And you know, and then that's something too. As I get older, I want scenes with more substance.
Okay, well, did that do it?
I think it did.
Where was the substance in that scene?
Well, one you hit. I think you hit a little close to home when you were talking about you. You know, you could have made it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, I know that it was just like.
But I think
there's things that hurt me. I mean, it didn't hurt me, but it's like,
oh, yeah. I think to me, that's the beauty of improv. Mm-hmm. Like to tap into that stuff, that stuff, like that whatever in our lives, it's different. Maybe we could have made it.
Here's the thing, too, that's changed since I've gotten to Austin is I have made it.
Right.
You know, things just change. I like to say that I got to Austin and realized that I was chasing the wrong dream.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's that, my dream now, my job now is to help people, you know, help people achieve their dreams. And that's giving, whereas before it was about taking, you know, I want to take your attention. I want to take your adoration. I want to take your love. Well, here it's more like, well, how can I help you? And that's another thing. That's something that as I've gotten older and moved to Austin, that I realized that everybody's given certain gifts. You know, we all have certain gifts, and there are wonderful accountants out in this world. We don't know any, but there are But you know, there are people that love being accountants, and they help people with their accounting work. And our job is we have these gifts, and our job is to get as good as we can at these gifts to help other people. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like your podcast and your teaching helps other people. Mm-hmm. And before it was just about, just look at me. I didn't really want to contribute. In hindsight, I realized I wanted to be a star, but I wanted it to be easy. And I wanted, our friends, like Mike Myers and Jon Favreau, where they worked hard. They were hard workers. You couldn't say they weren't hard workers. I just wanted Mike Myers or Jon Favreau to take me along with them. Does that make sense?
Yes. And, you know, it was interesting because I spent the day with you yesterday, and I thought to myself later, and this is an assessment of you. This is my experience of you or my judgment of you or whatever. I think that you always wanted to be a director. And I saw that even back in The Annoyance.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then... You know, you directed shows at The Annoyance, and then Theater of Go-Go, and now you're here in Austin.
Yes.
And I think how I thought about it was, Tom wants to be famous still, but I think you want to be famous for helping people.
Mm.
Do you think that fits?
I don't think it's a question of fame. I do like being recognized.
I get it. I do too.
And I like lately I've been recognized by people with the opening line of "How are the goats?" Which is a lot of fun.
But you want to be recognized for more than the goats.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
But I think one of my strong suits and something I really love to do is directing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm a good entertainer. I don't think I'm a good actor. Or a good performer. I don't think I'm a good actor. I think I'm a good rewrite guy. I don't think I'm a good writer. But if you give me a sketch that you've written, I can help you shape it.
But I think, too, and I'll drop my agenda after this question, there's a leadership quality in you. I saw it back in The Annoyance, and it's still true today. It's probably even bigger today. Would you agree to that? That you, there's part of you that wants to be a leader.
Oh, I love being the guy.
Okay.
I love being a big shot.
Mm-hmm. I'm not just saying a big shot. I mean the guy who carries out a vision.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely have a vision for the Institution Theater. And I guess. I mean, I don't know how to answer the question. I'm like, okay. You know? But I remember, too, when I remember standing in front of Theater Go-Go, which is a group that I had in L.A., and we did I call it late night bad taste theater. It was what we did at The Annoyance and some of what we do at the Institution. And standing there with the clipboard, and everybody else was seated in this little theater, and I said, okay, who wants to direct the show? And no one raised their hands, and so I went, okay, I guess I'm directing it. That's really how I became a director.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the first time I directed anything without Laura Hall,
mm-hmm.
You know, because we did Manson the Musical together and William Shakespeare's Sid and Nancy. The Tale of Two Star-Crossed Lovers on Heroin, mm-hmm. together. Were you in that? Did you?
No.
Okay.
You wouldn't cast me. No.
Well, it was a long time
no,
ago.
Right.
Let it go.
I let it go. I love a good resentment. It doesn't matter how long it is.
All right.
Actually, it's better because they age.
All right, good. Yeah.
So let's quickly talk about the improv, and then we'll get questions. And Dave, what time do we have to be? I got 8:58. Okay, great.
Don't go too long.
Great. We don't want to go too long because always want them leaving more, right?
Uh-huh.
Isn't they say that?
Leave them wanting more.
Okay, so going back to the improv.
Right.
You got the character, the state character. How did you develop that?
You went the state character? I heard A1 steak, and I like steak.
Uh-huh.
I mean, who does? Well, Joe does not like steak.
Right, so how did you then evolve that into kind of an older guy?
Just by the way, I like the sound of I like steak, and I just that voice, what might he stand like, and then we were standing like this, and then mm-hmm. moving, and then just listening and reacting to you,
mm-hmm.
you know, and make assumptions and treat them as real,
mm-hmm.
and that's, you know, and then it's just like playing catch. Yes, I hear you, and this is how I feel about it.
Yeah.
And being in the moment and listening.
Great. Anything we could have done better?
I think maybe I tried to force the ending a bit.
Okay.
When I brought it back to the steak, but I love a good button.
Right.
You know, Dell used to say the end is in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't realize that we were going to get a blackout. I thought maybe you were going to call it.
Right.
So I probably should have asked that before. But
because at that point I was like, okay, there was a couple times we could have had lights out mm-hmm. there. And you know, you got to let that go. And it was kind of fun to play through that action.
Yeah, no, you were great.
Right.
Yeah.
Because that's where I think we got a lot of gold.
Yeah.
For me, I was totally lost at the beginning of the scene.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, okay, I'm going to kind of be, I'll be in his age bracket, we'll play. I didn't know what the relationship was. We were two grumpy old people and mm-hmm. stuff like that.
I assumed we were sort of a modern day odd couple. Or okay. not an odd couple, because they were complete opposites.
Right.
But that we were sharing an apartment and right. it turned out to
be. I wish I would have mirrored your character more uh-huh. at the beginning, because I think it would have freed me up. I was in my head at the top. All right, so we're going to, anything else you want to say about what we did?
I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yes.
And it was, you know, it wasn't, I liked that it wasn't like funny people at a laundromat.
Right.
You know, that it was, yeah. And I like when we have true moments in comedy.
I love that. I love that, you know, like, because that's where your life experience is coming through, mm-hmm. you know. Because we've been around the block.
A couple times.
And we've been kicked pretty hard sometimes, too. Great. If we could turn the house lights up, we're going to get some questions for Austin's own Tom Booker at the Institution Theater.
Hey.
What does it feel like that, like, you get a great applause?
It feels nice. I mean, here's the thing. And maybe you, this is just such, and I'm going to gush. This is such a special place. And, It really, really is. Austin, Texas has saved my life. There are a number of people in this room who've saved my life. Austin,
because
Texas,
you told me you showed up and you were depressed.
I spent the first 6 months lying on the floor of my apartment crying.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't open my mail for 6 months. Just so you know, credit card companies get upset when you do that. And because I thought I'd been doing everything right and my life had just fallen apart. And when that happens, you don't know what to do because you thought you were doing it. And luckily, I had some money in the bank and you know, heavy resentment to keep me going. So that was nice.
Yeah. Resentment keeps me warm in Chicago. When it gets cold, you just throw it in the fireplace. Great. We have a question right here.
Yeah, I have a question. Hey, I was going to say, if getting sober was the only thing you accomplished, that's pretty fantastic.
Uh-huh.
So I applaud that. How much do you think the work you've done in sobriety has affected that shift that you refer to from wanting nothing but notoriety and fame versus mm-hmm. the shift of wanting to help people?
So let me just repeat that so the people on the podcast is like, the question was, how has sobriety helped? Affected the shift of not wanting to be as famous or famous and stuff like that.
I got sober
on April 23rd, 1993. So I moved out here with 14 years of sobriety. And my life was a mess. And I got hooked up with a guy named Charlie Parker, not the jazz guy. He builds golf netting. And he'd gone through the same thing. And then what I realized in Los Angeles, my spiritual practice consisted mainly of playing softball, being in AA plays, and going to meetings. But I didn't work the steps. And by coming out here and working with Charlie and really just going through the steps and really get into a spiritual practice. And what's weird, and I'm sure you're going to agree with this, improv is a spiritual practice.
Yeah.
You know, it is. You have to trust in the scene. Your job is to make the other person look good, be of service. You have to be honest.
You have to be in the moment.
You have to be in the moment. Yeah, and that's where God is. God's mm-hmm. in the moment. Oh, we're talking about God. but it's true, and you can feel it to give you an answer, I was living in ego, and here I still have ego. It's not, you know, I don't walk on water. I didn't do it, but I still have ego. But I also know the joy of helping people. You know, or working with people, and boy, it just feels a lot better. And also, I know that's the stuff I wanted. Either it's gonna come or it's not. You know, it's not up to me. And I can still work towards it, But it's more in the process than it is in the product, which is something we used to talk about at the Annoyance
right.
all the time.
It used to drive me nuts. But it's true. It took me, you know, what, till 50 to realize that it was true.
Yeah.
Focus on the process and the, you know, the product will come. Mm-hmm. But you got to focus on the...
And then Asaf talks about it, and he says he got
Asaf
this from...
Asaf Ronan, who is your partner
yeah.
at Institution mm-hmm. Theater.
He says he got this from Mick, but I first heard it from him. Inspiration over obligation. Mm-hmm. You know? Play over work.
Right. Yeah. Why does the relationship with you and him work so well at the institution?
Because we are complete opposites.
Okay.
And still best friends.
Okay.
I think, yeah, because I listened to... Give it up for Asaf Ronan. Yeah. He's a great guy, and he's a giver. And he, when I tell him that I used to be an asshole, he can't believe it. But then he's met some of my old friends, and like, oh yeah, he was. And we've been described as Bert and Ernie, uh-huh. and it's such a great description. And I once heard on a podcast. I listened to a lot of leadership and business podcasts because uh-huh. I don't know what I'm doing at the Institution
right.
Theater. I don't. And I heard a phrase that someone said: if we both think the same way, then one of us is redundant. And then when I heard that, it just clicked with me and Asaf.
You said a quote which I thought was interesting about he's passionate about improv.
Oh, yeah.
And can you repeat that?
He loves improv. I love attention.
Right.
Yeah. And that's true. And he's very passionate about the work and just really, you know, wants to try and make it better. And I'm very passionate about entertainment. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that we strive to do at the Institution Theater is we look at each show as an opportunity for a 47 person community to be formed. You know, we like to think that it's more of an experience, and that it's a party, and there just happens to be a show going on stage.
Mm-hmm.
We like to have the show begin once you walk through the door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's part of the experience.
You know, it's interesting because spending time with you yesterday, we're at the books. What's the bookstore?
Book People.
It's an independent bookstore, which I
yeah,
love.
Yeah, Book People.
Okay, and immediately we look at the books, but you go to the toy section. And then
yeah.
you tell me later that at your theater, you have all these magnets when you come in, mm-hmm. people play. And something tells me that you didn't have a childhood like myself.
What was your childhood like?
My parents were very neglectful people.
Uh-huh.
I felt like I had to be an adult and take care of them emotionally. And so I felt like at a very young age, I was an adult and I didn't get a childhood. And so when we were at the bookstore, you run to the toy section, pick up swords, whatever, and stuff
yeah.
like that. Is there some truth to what I have said?
I guess I don't know. I think I've always been interested in play. I mean, I'm a former mascot. And
right.
If you know me, I was a damn good mascot.
Right.
They wanted me to go to grad school so I could do it for two more years. I was good. And the henchman, that was me. And... my family, yes, I got everything I needed,
okay.
you know, and pretty much everything I wanted within reason. I mean, there
uh-huh.
were no ponies or monkeys, but I didn't get much guidance in hindsight, you know?
Right.
And, also it's just, and I think it might have something to do with Austin. It's, you don't need to take yourself seriously here.
Mm-hmm.
Where in LA, you're like, well, I don't know, David Schwimmer might be walking by.
Right.
And then I'll be on Friends, too.
Right. The thing that I noticed about L.A. is, and I think I've said this on the podcast.
And I like David Schwimmer, you're a very nice man.
All our friends who are in L.A. will not say anything bad about anybody
mm-hmm.
or a movie. They've lost their opinion. And I get it, because when you're out there, you never know if you're at a restaurant who may overhear you,
yeah.
and then you're afraid you're not going to get work.
Well, I think some of it, too, is they know how much hard work goes into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so to badmouth somebody's...
Because, you know, I noticed spending a whole afternoon with you, you will not badmouth anything.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Is that something...
Amy, is that true? No, I save it for home.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
All right, another question? Yes, right over here.
Yeah, I understand that you're in a troupe called Thomas.
What's it called? Okay.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
When we do improv, going to a dramatic space. Anger, we were very angry at that. Or I was, mm-hmm. we were both very angry. Do you like going?
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. I mean, it depends on the tone that starts, you know. And but I love having the confidence, and you know, again, but having the confidence to go there, you know, to know. And that just, I think, comes with being just an old man, is that I know nothing's going to hurt me, you know, where when I was younger, I needed to do it right. And here's like, oh, this looks like fun. Let's, and then, as Jimmy said earlier, we can use our experience, mm-hmm. you know, our disappointment. Like, I went to, you guys go to your high school reunions, even if you're going
to
hate
Didn't
it.
Didn't you take Ricky Lake to your high school reunion?
Yes, I took it.
I'll do the name dropping. I'll do the heavy lifting.
Yes, but you go, here's my theory. You graduate from high school thinking you know everything. You go to your 10-year reunion hoping everybody thinks you know everything. You go to your 20-year reunion going, I don't know a goddamn thing. How are you? And you go to your 30-year reunion going, we're not dead! But go to your reunions, especially the 30-year.
Was that something? Is that new, or is that, have you heard that, Amy?
Oh, she heard that, yeah.
Okay, great. All right.
But it's true.
Another question for Tom?
You didn't.
Yes, over here.
Yeah, so I was wondering what your feelings are as far as making the transition to owning a theater from full-on pursuit of the performance side. Uh-huh. And if you ever feel like you're getting bogged down in the profit margins of the thing,
All right.
So the question is basically dealing with the business side of running a theater.
All right.
And how does it affect you and your performance and just in general?
I've wanted a theater since 1988. So, in fact, I remember riding in the car with Jessica, and she could tell when I was looking for rent signs in L.A. because I would veer off into.
But even before that, didn't you want to open?
Downstairs.
Downstairs at the Annoyance.
Yeah.
But then when you went to New York or L.A., you wanted to open an Annoyance. I think you wanted to open an Annoyance in New York.
We did something. Actually, I got an email from Gary today. We did something at CBGB's.
Okay.
That was terrible because I'm terrible at planning. But it was a lot of fun, and I can say that we performed at CBGB's.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to do the Annoyance Theater East.
Yes.
And then I wanted to do something called, I wanted to do a drive-in show down in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And each month we would do a different drive-in show. And like, I wanted to do a beach show, and I wanted to bring sand and put it all over there. And I wanted to do a sexploitation thing, and Mark Sutton was going to be the owner of the drive-in. And every time they about had sex, the bulb was going to go out, and it would just be like E.J. Peters and other people just moaning. So maybe it's
so
a good
you
thing
always
that
wanted to have a theater. It was a dream.
Yes. Yeah.
So what about what about the business? Having to deal with the business.
Actually, right now I like it because I want to learn how to do it. There are times where it does get overwhelming, but I'm learning how to do it. I'm learning how to ask people who have done it before me, and we're very lucky in that we have like Mick and Jennifer Eslin and Sharna so I'm kind of more into that now than I am into performing, and I want to cut back on my creativity and become more of an executive producer and a mentor and help young people craft their vision. Which I've been doing, and it's what's funny is it always surprises them when I'm right. That's just been really weird. It's just like, oh, you were right. Yes.
Great. So we got to wrap this up.
Oh, Tom, no, I want to keep
thank
talking.
Thank you so much. But one, before you go, one thing.
Yes.
What piece of advice would you give somebody starting out in improv today?
Well, what piece of advice? Have fun, because that's the only way you're going to find your true voice. If you want to... If you want to have a career in acting or comedy, treat yourself like a small business, and set your goal and then walk it back. And what steps do you need to take? And if you don't know what to do, you find someone who's done it before you. You ask them what they did, and unlike me, you do exactly what they did. And because you don't have to invent the wheel. And as far as reinvent the wheel, it's around. And as far as performing, just give yourself room to fail. It's been my experience with my students, and I've had two on Saturday Night Live.
Who are they?
Noel Wells and Bill Hader.
Okay.
I taught them everything. They're very talented before they got to me. But it's been my experience that the students that are willing to make mistakes don't make mistakes. So be willing to make mistakes. Also, know that in your career, you're going to make missteps. That just means you're doing it. There's something, too, that I'm sorry, I'm going to ramble, but there's always going to be someone who tells you you're doing it wrong or it's a mistake if you do it. I swear to God, there's always going to be someone there. And they have good intentions, but don't listen to them. I think it was Socrates or Aristotle or Ben Crosby once said, if you want to please everyone, do nothing, say nothing, and be nothing. And there are times at the Institution Theater where I have to remember that, because there's always going to be someone upset with what you're doing. Just do, as long as no one's getting hurt, do what you're doing. Does that make sense? Cool.
And there you have it. It's another episode of Improv Nerd is in the can. And I want to thank our guest, Tom Booker. And I also want to thank all the great people at the Out of Bounds Comedy Festival in Austin, especially Dave Buckman and Joseph and Karen for singing the Improv Nerd theme. It just made it such a wonderful, wonderful experience. Also, I want to thank Dan Schiffmacher here in Chicago. He's my producer who's putting this all together so you can hear it right now. So thank you, Dan, for making me sound so slick and professional. If you want more information about me, Jimmy Corain, and my award-winning improv classes, The Art of Slow Comedy, or my books, Improvising Better, or Improv Therapy, or Improv Nerd T-shirts, or my workshops, and especially if you want my improv blog, each week I send you out a blog that's going to make you a better improviser and hopefully a little better person. I can't promise on the second thing. That's up to you. Go to my website, jimmycorain.com. That's jimmycorain.com. Also, we are so lucky to be part of a podcast collective called feralaudio.com. And we are there with Chelsea Peretti. We are there with Dan Harmon. We are there with Matt Dwyer, Steve Agee, Todd Berry. The names go on and on. Go to feralaudio.com to hear some of the funniest podcasts out there. Also, as you know, we're taking over social media, and we're doing it one platform at a time. Go to our Improv Nerd Facebook page and like us, because it really helps with my low self-esteem. Follow us on Twitter, improv_nerd. We also have a YouTube channel. You can see little clips from the show that'll blow your mind. That's it. I love you guys so much, so much. And I want to thank you for listening. And until next time, remember, walk, don't run.
Hello, I'm Dave Ross.
Hey, and I'm Hampton Yunt.
And we host Suicide Buddies on Starburns Audio.
That's right. It's a podcast about suicide, but not to make light of it. We actually talk about suicidal thoughts, depression, kind of with a sense of levity that Dave and I have with each other. He's my best friend. Come on.
Yeah, we're buddies. Suicide Buddies.
That's the title.
One of our favorite episodes that we've recorded so far is about this guy, Jan Pataki, who was a Polish aristocrat in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And he, one of the reasons it's possible that he killed himself is that he thought he was a werewolf.
Oh.
Check out a clip. It also makes me think, like, we were talking about in the Norway black metal episode, how, like, just the culture of your surroundings can affect you. Like, yeah. He's in a castle in Poland. He's like, I mean, if you lived in a castle in Poland and no one knew anything about anything, you might be like, I'm a bat. I'm probably a bat.
That's like literally what happened to Batman. He literally is in his mansion. He's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat. I'm a bat.
I'm a
bat that helps people.
I'm a bat that helps people.
I'm a rich...
I don't know what you want from me. And my girlfriend, she's a cat. She's a cat.
My girlfriend's a cat.
She steals things. She's a woman who steals things. She's a cat. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat.
I help people.
She's a cat. We fight a penguin.